Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, scumbags. This is the Scummy Mummies podcast with your hosts, Ellie Gibson and Helen Thorne.
Welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. It's me, Ellie Gibson.
And it's me, Helen Thorne.
And our guest today is the amazing Mika Simmons.
Hello.
Let's hear that. I'll talk over that with my trombone. Let's hear that again, please.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh, hello. So you sound like the end of a long tunnel. Hello. Come in over. Can you hear? Yes, Mika, I'm sitting next to you. Let's not start off on a negative note. Let's start off on a jolly, happy note, because we're with you, Mika, and you make us jolly and happy.
Well, I've actually been trying to prepare some jokes. I felt quite nervous about coming on the podcast, and I spent the last 2 weeks since you've asked me thinking, how can I be as funny as Helen and Ellie? And I've actually surrendered to the fact that I'm just not going to be able to be. But I would like to tell you,
Mika,
my favourite joke.
We didn't invite you because we think you're funny.
I thought I should tell you my favourite joke, though.
Oh, this is good start. Go on.
This is like when my dad says, I've got a joke for the readers. All right, go on then, Mika. Okay. Let's hear Mika's favourite joke,
okay,
everyone.
This is my favourite. Well, actually, I've got some really dirty, rude ones that I'm not going to share, but this is my favourite joke of all time. Are you ready?
Yes, go.
Okay. What did the zero say to the eight?
Seven. two.
Nice belt.
Thanks for coming, Mika. Yeah, we've got time for, sadly.
I'm not going to get a
everyone
guess.
Loves a numerical based pun.
That's a great joke. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for being bold enough to share your truth with us, Mika.
I thought I'd get out of the way, but also I felt like I was auditioning for your next Edinburgh show.
To be fair, that's better than most jokes in our last Edinburgh show. So I think that's, and it's not even about
Write it down, Ellie.
Oh, no, thank you, Mika. Now, if you're listening, if you've not heard of Mika Simmons, you'll be amazed here. She's not actually a comedian. Mika, who are you? Why don't you introduce yourself?
I'm not a comedian. I'm an actor and a film writer and director and an activist in women's health.
Tell us about the happy vagina, because that's how we met you. That's how we know you from, isn't it?
Well, I think we first met at a screening for I, Tonya, which was for my charity, Lady Garden Foundation. But the happy vagina has been born out of Lady Garden Foundation. So you're kind of on the right page.
Yeah.
I started my charity, Lady Garden Foundation, after losing my mum to ovarian cancer, which was quite a long time ago. It was 20 years ago when we lost her, very quickly after a 9-month battle with that particular cancer. And I guess the podcast and now book and also platform, The Happy Vagina, grew out of a burning, I'm going to use all the words, being born, burning desire to integrate my work as an entertainer and a performer and an all-round show-off with the work that I was doing as an activist in the women's health space. And I felt like somehow or other the work in the charity space was really important, but I wanted to take that voice that I'd developed and do something more entertaining with it. And so the Half Vagina podcast was born.
Mm. Oh, so Lady Garden then. So what's the main objective of Lady Garden?
So we started in 2014 and my next door neighbour, Dr. Susanna Banerjee, basically became the head of oncology for gynae cancers at the Royal Marsden Hospital. And she tapped on my door one day and said, you know, there was no money for research into ovarian cancer. And I'd already known that she'd decided to dedicate her life to ovarian cancer. So I basically put together a group of women to fundraise, which I'm really bad at. So the money that has been raised by the charity, which is quite a significant amount, I can't really claim to have done any of
it's
that.
It's over £1 million now,
yeah,
isn't it?
It's over £2 million. And I just like being noisy and basically as disruptive as I can, which I've now got a lobbying board, Ginsburg Women's Health Board, where essentially all we do is make noise about women's health issues. Mm. And that's kind of where, I mean, you know, my mum was a really loud, obnoxious feminist.
Mm.
And I have that spirit in me. I mean, I set Lady Garden up because my mum died in my arms of ovarian cancer, and a good 12 or 13 years later, I think I was still somehow stuck in my grief. So it's not been a selfish pursuit, but I can hands down say that launching that has healed the gaping hole that had been left in my life after losing my mum. And when people come to me and say, what can I do about my grief, I do say to them, go and do some good. Go and give back. So I think charity at that level, in that kind of feeling of the grassroots of a charity, is very important for us as human beings to be able to go and help, to do something with pain in order to make change. In terms of healthcare and why it's dependent on something like Lady Garden Foundation to give the Royal Marsden and the ICR, which is their adjoining research facility, the money in order to properly research ovarian cancer. It's outrageous. It's outrageous that actually the money isn't there from the government. It's outrageous that the ovaries weren't discovered until the 19th century. I mean, if we want to go into like the issues of women's health in general and why more money's put into prostate cancer than there is to ovarian cancer, it's such a complex area. And if in my absolute ideal world, health would be outside of politics and it would be outside of charity, because it's fundamentally the most essential thing we've got as human beings.
And it's a human right. I think it should be a human right to have healthcare and
good.
So fuck the Tories, that's what we're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you say that, but so it's not just the Tory government, it's just politicians. And I'm quite down on politicians at the moment. I think in general, they're like, they don't care about human beings. They care about looking good and winning and making sure that it's their legislation that's going through.
I don't think that's true of all of them.
You don't?
I don't. I know some for whom that's not true. I know people who are really principled and have strong beliefs, particularly about the NHS, and who do believe in making things better for the majority of people.
Mm.
And I know which side most of those people are on.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. There's good and bad on both sides. Of course there is. Of course, what you're talking about, career politicians and, you know, who are just in it for the money or the fame, whatever, of course, the power, of course those people exist on both sides.
Mm.
But if I had to place a bet on which side had the most of those people...
Yeah.
But, you know...
Yeah.
But I know, and in terms of the voice... I mean, charities are a good place in which you can have a front in which you know, you've done amazing work in advocacy, and also having a charity does give you that shop front in which you can start to shout louder and confront things as well. And I think, so what impacts have you seen from doing Lady Garden, and what are you sort of most proud of with the work that you've done with it?
I think the most significant piece of research that we gave quite a lot of money towards is a new medication for ovarian cancer called olaparib, which we were not the only charitable institution that put money towards it, but it is essentially a drug which will prolong the life of a woman who has ovarian cancer, providing her cancer is caught early enough.
Yeah.
And that was not available when my mum was diagnosed.
Would that have made a difference to your mum's outcome, do you
think?
It's
really tricky for me to say, because mum's cancer was something called a serous ovarian cancer, which is probably the most serious. And because women's health is so misunderstood and we're so often gaslit by doctors, when my mum went to the doctors, she was told that it was probably her menopause and fibroids. So in the gap between when the doctor told her that her bloating and repeated bleeding was probably fibroids, by the time she got her diagnosis, she was stage 4. and stage 4 ovarian cancer would not have had any benefit from having olaparib because you're basically already kind of on death row, which is, again, coming back to the beginning of our chat, why I'm so committed and passionate to the activism and the voice and the kind of like change side of the work that I do. Because, I mean, my mum kind of did understand her body really well. So it says everything that you need to know about why she believed this doctor that it was fibroids, that as human beings in general, we don't understand our bodies well enough. We have handed over our entire agency of our bodies to the medics. And I think that's outrageous. I think we are like children in terms of our own bodies and our own healthcare. And I think that every human being should start taking more responsibility to understand the cycles in their body and to be healthier and fitter so that you know when something's wrong. But my mum was one of those people, and she did hand over her power to her doctor who told her it was fibroids. But I think the more noise that I can make and the more message that I can send through the work that I do with the Lady Garden Foundation, through the podcast Happy Vagina, through Ginsburg Women's Health Board, and just to try and like alert people to not necessarily believe your doctor. If you've got symptoms, make sure you know what the symptoms are, and make sure that if those symptoms are recurring and you're being fobbed off by a doctor, that you challenge them. You know, and so it's kind of, it's a double-pronged attack, because you've got people raising money who are creating better drugs, you know. And actually, one of the things when I started Lady Garden Foundation that I really struggled with was whether that angle, that prong, is the right one. Because surely better health in general and better understanding of our bodies is a much more egalitarian way to deal with healthcare, rather than coming at it from the other end. This person's got cancer, let's give them medication. What about if actually health was better in general, so that we were obliterating cancer from that way, and also better testing as well? That's the other thing that's really, really missing in terms of particularly gynecological cancers, because it's such a complex area. We don't, other than cervical, because your cervix is on the outside of the body, we don't have great testing for these specific cancers for women. But yeah, I mean, I think that being educated about your own body would mean that if you did have ovarian cancer, that particular medication, olaparib, should help you. So if you get caught stage 1, 2, maybe 3, then it would give you, but we're only, I mean, it makes me feel really emotional. We're talking like 2 to 3 years. And actually, do you know, when I first heard that, I think maybe because I was so hurt that my mum had 9 months, and most of that time she was very, very ill, I think I thought, like, my immediate reaction was, so what? So what to have 2 to 3 years? We're still fighting this deadly disease, cancer, that is going to take that mum, sister, aunt, best friend, wife from someone. And then when I'd thawed out a bit and really thought about it, I could see that for people that are losing someone to cancer, that 2 to 3 years for them might mean that they could do the things. And especially last year, I lost 2 of my uncles to cancer very, very quickly. So I've seen their families. Thank you. But I've seen the families go through an even shorter 3-month period and not be able to spend, you know, go for that trip to the beach, have that picnic with the family in the park that you wanted to, the wedding brought forwards. So, yeah, so olaparib is a medication that if someone was diagnosed with ovarian cancer and caught it early enough, might give them more time.
So that 9 months, because I've known people who died, but usually very quickly, or they're very, very old, you know. How do you look down the barrel of that? Right, we've got 9 months. Like, what? I don't know what you do with that time or where you start.
Well, my mum was extraordinary and very resilient, stroke headstrong, stroke perhaps a little naive. So when she was diagnosed, I mean, she went to the doctors, and I think she knew by the time she was being called in for test results quite quickly. They move you up, then you kind of know that they're taking it more seriously. And the doctor left the room, so she went round the back of his desk and had a look at the thing.
Oh, she read her notes.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it said stage four ovarian cancer.
She's bold. I love it.
Yeah. And she came home and it just turned out that I was back at home for some kind of weird school reunion thing, which was even weirder after the news she gave me. But she just sat down, and my brother was there too, which I don't know why he was there. But she just sat down and said, you know, I've been diagnosed with ovarian cancer and I'm not going to die. And I just, I mean, you know, everything that she'd always said she was going to do, she'd do. And I didn't know what ovarian cancer was. I don't think I knew what the ovaries were, you know. So she said, I'm not going to die. And I just believed her. And then I came back to London and a girlfriend that I was living with, when I told her, she kind of went white as a sheet. And I thought, oh, something's up here. We had a bit of a chat and she said, look, it is one of the most deadly cancers. It's hard to catch early. And the statistics of survival are very, very poor. So I had an inkling, but my mum was like, I mean, she was just absolutely determined. And the Bristol Royal Infirmary put her on a trial, a new drug trial, like the one that we funded, Olaparib. And she got really good results from it. So the first 6 months of her being ill, I don't think I knew I was looking down the barrel of a gun, even though that mate had kind of highlighted the fact. I had the mate who's being like a realist, and then I've got this like warrior of a mother who was absolutely determined that she was going to be the one that survived it. And then she gets put on this really, you know, innovative drug trial, and the results are good. She has probably 6 sessions of chemo or however many she had. And we nursed her through those, and that was really hard. And my brother and I tag teamed, so I was working as an actress and I just had a couple of first big breaks. And my brother was working as a journalist, freelancing in London, and we'd do 3 days and 3 days with a sort of switch in the middle on the day 7. And we nursed her through the chemo and we looked after her, and loads of friends and family rallied round. She had an amazing network. She was a very community-based woman. So we had a lot of support. But I don't think I thought she was going to go. And the really mad thing is, and this happens a lot, I've discovered, is at the end of this treatment that she had on this new medication, she was given the all clear. And I got very swept up as well. And I do need to say this out loud. At the time, there was this book out about a woman who'd healed her cancer through meditating. And it was a period of time when there was a lot of noise going on about the power of the mind over cancer and stuff. And I think it's quite dangerous. I have to say, I think it's really dangerous because I don't think we understand cancer. I think cancers are very, very different. And I think they're very different in the way that they can attack a different body. So it's so nuanced as a disease that the one person that gets the same diagnosis that can sit in a room on her own and meditate for an hour every day and get rid of her cancer, the same other person might do that and that may not happen. But at the time, I was quite caught up in that.
Of course, because you're looking for hope. You're looking for,
I definitely was looking for hope, but there was also a real... It was the time when that kind of thinking was first born, you know, it was really potent at the time. So the combination of me thinking I was God and that I could...
It's always a great start. Always good. That I could unusual for an actor.
And that I could control my mum's cancer and the fact that this new treatment was working. When she got the all clear, I don't know.
That stuff makes me really angry, that stuff. You and I were at a wellness thing a few years ago, and this bloke, who claimed to be some sort of nutritionist, but I think just knew how to peel an onion, told this story about how someone, he'd read some story about a woman who cured her son's cancer by making the son eat a box of mangoes every day. And I became actively furious. Just like, how fucking dare you? Furious. You don't know who in this room, you don't know what they're going through or who they've lost. You don't know if someone's not sitting here right now going, oh shit, if only I'd made my mum eat a box of mangoes. What fucking horseshit are you talking? It makes me cross.
Yeah.
And you're right.
Does it make you cross?
Very angry.
I think you're right when you're saying dangerous, because when you're facing cancer as yourself or your family, you are so vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And this is everything. Mm-hmm. And you know, of course you want everything to be better, but yeah, so that was, did you say that was 6 months into
about 6 months in, and then mum went off to America to actually kind of see some counsellors and to do some processing, I think, really. Mm. She was really interested in self-development. She always has been throughout my life. And when my brother picked her up from the airport, he said she could barely walk. So she went for 3 weeks. And when she got back 3 weeks later, she was, in so much pain, hadn't been able to eat. And she went in for tests and she was, in their words, riddled with cancer.
Oh, after saying she had the all clear.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And
I'm
literally,
so
just, so it must have been a month. I mean, I'm sure there was a tiny gap between the all clear and when she travelled.
Mm.
But let's say a month or so later. And we lost her 6 weeks later.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
And was she in hospital the whole time?
No. I mean, she got back from the States and she'd actually come back while I was on my first holiday for like a year. I'd gone to Corfu, I think, with a girlfriend and her family, and my brother and her decided not to tell me while I was on holiday. So I got back from my holiday to receive this news, and I went down to Bristol to see her, and she was like, I'm going to go and get more treatment in Germany in this alternative clinic. And I think probably other than her dying in my arms, the most painful moment of my life was having to say first to my brother and then to my mum. So I said, Keir, you know, we have to tell her that she's going to die.
Mm.
Because she's disappearing. Mm. She's not going to make it. And I can see that. And so then we had to go into her bedroom where she was lying down in bed, not able to get up, in so much pain. And I had to say to her, Mum, you know, you're going to die.
Mm.
And
that's a really hard thing to
say.
Yeah,
and sometimes, you know, and then sometimes since I thought, wow, what if I know this is a crazy thought, but there has been on occasion a thought of, what if I hadn't said it? Like, did I suppose one of the things that happened post losing Mum was that I would speak to doctors and say, why don't you, they told us we might have 3 months with Mum. And what I've discovered is that they always say that. And I said, why? Why do you always say, when someone's now terminal, why do you say they've probably got 3 months? We can't say maybe 3 months. And they said, because miracles happen. So sometimes, and what the doctors have said to me is they don't want to lock someone's thought patterns down, right? Because the mind is really powerful, actually. Mm. So if they said, you've got 3 weeks, which is kind of, you know, 3 to 6 weeks, which is more normal than the 3 months, then that person might give up. Whereas if you say 3 months, then that person rallies and sees the family they want to see to say goodbye to. Mm. So they said that she had sort of up to 3 months and she didn't. She had, I think we had 6 weeks with her max. And she really wanted to die at home. And I just, my brother had come back. We were still tag teaming and my brother had come back to London. We had to work.
Mm.
You know, we had to pay rent and stuff. So, and the day before she died, she was really, really erratic. And I was scared. And she wouldn't let anyone else look after her other than friends and family. So we did try to get in some Macmillan nurses and people to be in the house. And she was having none of it. None of it. Yeah. She didn't want anyone around her. She was really scared of dying, you know. Yeah. She was very, very scared of dying.
And how old was she?
She was 54 when she died.
Yeah, that's too young.
Yeah.
That's far too young.
So she was very erratic and I couldn't cope. And I've never held a resentment against myself for it, because I did such a great job of being present during her illness.
Mm.
But she did want to die at home, and I didn't know that she was dying. It was a learning curve is like an understatement. But I basically, she was so erratic, and I called for help, and the hospice sent an ambulance, And I thought she was going in for a bit. I thought we were going to have a break. And then she was going to come home again.
Mm.
And I put my head on the pillow that night. We took her to the hospice, but put my head on the pillow that night. They gave me a little private room that I could go and have some sleep in.
Mm.
And I put my head in the pillow. And as soon as I started to fall asleep, an alarm went off. And I knew immediately that it was my mum dying.
Mm.
And someone came into the room and said, come now.
Yeah.
And I went into the room and she was dying.
Mm.
And, you know, I do think that the human spirit is... I think probably if I'd have been sat next to her bed, she wouldn't have gone because she didn't want to go.
Mm.
You know, she loved us so much and she loved life. And she had so much. She'd actually just become a Labour Party councillor. She'd left my dad, or my dad had left her, or whatever happened. But that was a mess. And she was just reclaiming herself, like Helen, like you are doing now. Like, it's so wonderful to watch you go
through. Her new start.
Yeah, she bought this tiny little house in Bristol, and she had a boyfriend that was an artist and a graffiti artist as well, even though they were the same age. And he'd go out in the middle of the night, and, you know, like perfume boards, he'd go out and like change them and put slogans on them and stuff. And he was a painter decorator, and she was having the life that she wanted. And it was taken
away. Where is he now? I'm just asking, is Helen single? I don't know if you want to talk about it.
Do like an artist. I have a penchant for an artist.
I'll give you Steve's number.
Thank you very much. I'm glad that this has turned towards me and my hungry sex life.
I don't. I mean, I it's good. It especially for me, because I am quite hard on myself.
Mm.
I did have some big cries about the fact that I didn't give her her dream of dying at home, but I also know that I absolutely did my best. You know?
Absolutely. So, yeah, you absolutely did your best. And to be, I've a friend who's recently had a mother who's died, and she was there with her mum, and and after her mum died, she hopped into bed with her and lay next to her.
Did she?
Yeah, and she said that was really beautiful, and I just think, gosh, I think we're still learning so much about how to cope with death. We don't talk about it enough. We don't. And so, and I want to say thank you for telling us this story, because I know it's not easy, and I can't imagine going through that. But I think it's really, thank you for.
Yeah. Well, it was a long time ago, though. And like, I was 26 at the time, and I did not jump into bed. I was absolutely terrified of what was going on. So I think being a grown up now and needing to kind of encompass death would be a very different experience.
Yeah, of course.
But I think, you know, I think it's the thing that makes you, isn't it? It's the thing we go through. Well,
evidently it was a life-changing moment for you.
Mm. And yeah. I think, I mean, it's really interesting, but as I said at the beginning, Lady Garden is the thing that actually really helped me finally fill the hole, because I did some good. And in some ways, with the podcast, with The Half Vagina, it's a pleasure to talk about my mum, and it's a huge part of my life's work to make change in terms of gynecological cancer specifically and women's health. But with the podcast, quite selfishly, there was a bit of me that was like, I need to stop talking about my mum now. For me, so I don't mind talking about it like this.
Sorry, we've just started talking. I'm banging about 25 minutes.
No, but listen, like when you're doing something like that, every single like dinner party I went to, all anyone wanted to talk, it's not the same now. I've got other things that I do that I can chat about. Now people want to tell me about their vaginas.
No, you literally found a gap in the market, a gash in the market.
So there was definitely a hole in.
I might. My next podcast might be about money.
Yeah.
And I don't know what else do we want to like bring into our lives.
I mean, I adore your podcast, and I loved. We did a live podcast with the incredible Amanda Abington recently, and that was fucking hoot. And it was great, and we had a lovely audience and everything like that. And I think you are really empowering women, but you're empowering conversations, and the more we talk about it, the better it is. Because I, up until I became single, I was very shy about talking about sex, never really masturbated, never really, I hadn't seen my vulva, I didn't know, I never looked at my fanny.
Listeners will know, if you go back to old episodes of the podcast, if the subject of fannies or wanking, your voice goes,
oh, it's fine. And I used to, my eyelashes would flutter, yeah, and I couldn't even look Ellie in the face, and Ellie would be like, what's a lemon party, Helen?
Because you know what lemon pie is. No. Don't Google it. Don't Google it. Don't Google it.
Google it.
Tell me, tea bag. No. All the things. All the things.
I know what tea bagging is. What's the lemon party?
I'm going to Google it to you quickly.
What is it?
Oh, it's. I mean, I know other friends have listened to the podcast, but I mean, even though I've had my sexual revolution, and I'm, you know, really into self-pleasure.
But I love the fact that you even have to say that in a funny voice. Try.
She's rubbing her shoes. She's rubbing her side.
She's like having a mild panic attack. Paper bag Velen. say after me. I am having my sexual revolution.
I'm having my sexual revolution.
Yes, Helen.
Can you not have it on my sofa?
I quite like to have a sexual revolution, actually.
So that is good. It's a phase. It's a phase. But it's because I love what you're doing on Instagram and also I love that you always put like vagina in capital letters. Like I think what you're doing is so positive, because I was that woman who felt shame and shyness and.
But me too.
Yeah.
Me too, Helen.
And you've come on a journey.
I am on a journey. We're all on a journey together. I mean, you know, it's I think that what's really interesting for me, having grown up with a mum who was really one of the forerunners in terms of exploring women's anatomy. So when she died, she was writing her dissertation in women's studies on mastectomies and the impact of whether women should even be doing that and stuff. But she also used to have vagina examining workshops in our home, right? So you'd think that I wouldn't have been shy about sex, but I was totally shut down about sex before I started the podcast.
So
I
where did that come from then? That wasn't at home.
My interest in sex?
No, the shyness and the... Because if you weren't brought up in a house where it's like, oh, it's never mentioned and it's called a foo-foo. Because that's what we're told as parents. Like, we're told, oh, you shouldn't call it a panini or whatever. School. You should call it by its proper name. But you think it was school, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think essentially you can have... I mean, I went to quite a straight comp, like in the sense that my parents took us out of Southeast London to grow up in the countryside for kind of the good life. But the school, the local school, was... it was quite sort of traditional somehow. Like, there was something about it that wasn't... It didn't match my bohemian back... My bohemian home life did not in any way match my school life. And at school, it was really misogynistic and bad for men too. But, you know, making fun of the girls for having periods. And the sex education was appalling. And the boys were taken out of the class when we were taught about periods. And most of the time, the boys at our school seemed to like to chase us around the field and try and pin us down and put their hands up our skirts. I mean, it was like, it's like, you know, we're like apes. And my school was like apes. And I think it doesn't matter how good my home life was, I'd come home with this trauma. I do think that those school experiences are traumatizing, and they were a stronger voice in my head than my amazing feminist, because my brain at that age was malleable, and I'm a very sensitive person. I'm an artist and a creative, so I take things in probably too much, and particularly in my youth I took things in too much. But so it's like when you've got sort of sex that's aggressive and antsy and misogynistic in its temperament within your school teenage years, that's how I learned about sex, you know. And I think I just thought, oh, this is like, I don't want to be empowered. I mean, I remember the first time someone at university said to me that she liked to masturbate to go to sleep, and I thought I was going to have a panic attack.
That's enough. I would have done the same.
I was just like, you know, I was like, what are you talking about? And then another girlfriend of mine, who I won't mention, but we're still really good friends, and she once said to me that she could hear me masturbating through the wall. And I literally thought I wanted to jump off the fucking top of the house.
What were you doing? Did you have a fucking Black & Decker out?
I think she was just being that, you know, when you're at uni and people are a little bit antsy and a bit kind of like... I think she was just trying to push my buttons.
Yeah.
But the fact was, is probably I was. I mean, I don't actually remember doing it, but I'm sure I was. And the thought that someone could hear me was mortifying. So I was just like you, and I don't think it's...
I wonder if it's a cultural thing as well, because I remember being about 20 and I did stay in Southeast London for my education. We talked about vaginas all the time, and also it was a girls' school, so maybe that was it. I didn't have, because I know Helen went to a mixed school as well, so I didn't have that aggressive sort of thing going on, so maybe that was it. So I was, you know, sort of not too bothered. But then I did go when I was about 20. I went and I worked in Ohio in America for a summer, and I shared this apartment with these 15 American girls who were all about 19 and who were all insane. So I think five of them were exotic dancers as well as working the steam park where we worked. Three of them were in prison a few years later, I heard. But they were all from, like, you know, the Midwest and the Deep South and, like, proper, like, real America, right? Not like New York and California, like the movies. Which was what,
international.
Naively at 20, I sort of thought was what America was like. Basically, Sex and the City and Saved by the Bell. That was my touch point. And it turns out most America isn't like that.
No, it's not like Fame.
And these birds weren't like that. It was a cultural awakening. They were lovely, but they were very different to me, much more different than I'd been aware. And on my first day, they were like, welcome to the apartment, just so you know, we're all really into masturbation. Or jerking off, as they would call it. And that, when obviously then I started talking about wanking, which they found hilarious because they thought it was the funniest word they'd ever heard.
Say it again, English lady.
I was basically Stephen Fry in Ohio. I was fascinated by the fact that they were all super open with each other about it. And not only the other people who would come to the apartment, like men who would, like, come to the apartment.
Wow.
And in front of them, like, I shared a room with them, and I had a sort of, I was seeing this lifeguard bloke. They were like, I was like, oh, me and Joey are just going to go into my room. And they were like, I think it was Latanya was like, I need 20 minutes. I went to the exit. She's like, I was like, well, we were just going to go and hang out just on our own for a bit. And she's like, no, I need my 20 minutes. I'm going to go in there and then you can have your 20 minutes. Yeah. And I'd be like, oh, no, it's not for that. And everyone was like, yeah, it fucking is. So they used to like, hold my phone calls. Like, if anyone rings, tell them I'll call them back in 20 minutes and stuff like that. And I would, like, I'd lived in a university house and all this by that point. But that was mind blowing. Yeah.
Wow, the wank house.
The wank house. It was called the 20 minuters. Like, you know, like the pilots who used to come, and that was the average life expectancy. And there was graffiti about them and stuff on there, and people were quite proud of it. It was a real... I'm saying maybe that's why... I think the girls' school thing, but also that, having that experience quite young, was like, oh, fuck. Like, you know...
I never talked about wanking with my friends until my late 30s and early 40s.
Mm. Right.
So we have had a different... You know, also, I grew up... My dad's a vicar, and my... so, you know, it was... never. Now I'm talking. I've got all Boris.
And it don't wasn't, do that.
No. But just such. You know, and it is the roll of the dice about, you know, the experiences you have and that sort of thing. But also now, because it is changing overtly through the power of social media, through the power of louder voices, podcasts, and people who are, you know, thankfully pushing this agenda and pushing these. Conversations.
Yeah, and I think when I started the Happy Vagina podcast, we recorded the first season at the end of 2019 and launched January 2020. And that first season, I think my intention was to interview humans, but mostly women, about gynecological stuff.
Another cat podcast about gynecological stuff, maybe, if you're thinking of stuff, by the way. Perhaps fish, goldfish.
Everyone has to get pregnant somehow.
Lemmings.
But I think because I'd been so heavily invested in Lady Garden Foundation, I think that's kind of where I thought the trajectory of my podcast was going to go. Mm. And then suddenly I had 8 episodes, and I did a little bit of a fun quiz at the beginning to try and, like, break down some of the...
Now, look, I've been on your podcast. You're the shittest quiz master. I love you to bits, but you're shit at quizzes, Mika. They're not for you. It's not your format.
I'm so sorry, but Gwyneth Paltrow was utterly devastated that I hadn't included the quiz in her podcast. So I begged to
do a podcast with Gwyneth Paltrow?
Yes, babe.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, she texted me about it. She texted me about it.
Oh, well, she didn't text me. It texted me about it.
No, because I, in my book, I talk about how... I bought Gwyneth Paltrow's vibrator. The double ender.
Yeah.
Which I bought because you posted it.
I posted it. Yeah.
And I was like,
you're welcome,
I need to...
Gwyneth. Commission.
You're very
I'll
welcome.
Give you my
she needs the money. She's very worried about heating bills.
It is the best sex toy I've ever heard. Yeah. And I've had it by myself most of the time, but I've used it when I've had, you know, one of my lovers over.
Yeah.
Oh, glorious.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just...
What's wrong with cucumber like the old days?
Anyway, it's like a vibrating
tennis ball. It's a cost of living crisis. You can't be telling people to buy Gwyneth Paltrow. Get yourself a Pringles tube and your electric toothbrush. Get masking tape over the top. Same fucking difference.
Oh, there's our next real Ellie.
Well, also, actually, they can't deliver them to the UK at the moment because of probably Brexit, but I don't know. But she, that first season, which was Gwyneth's on season 4, but that first season... I did a really good quiz that is very educational and entertaining, Ellie.
I'll be the judge of that.
And within the kind of like quiz questions, there was always something about sex, like, you know, true or false, 65% of women own, more women in the UK own a vibrator than a dishwasher, true or false, right? And the
false.
Answer is true.
Is it?
Yes,
is
true.
It bollocks?
Yeah, it's true. Anyway, so I would ask questions like that.
Listen,
and
I know,
then they never stopped talking about sex on the podcast. To the extent that when June Sarpong came on, I learned about the thing called the blended orgasm. So my sexual revolution happened. Like, I know people are going to be like, I'm not going to listen to Mika's podcast because she obviously doesn't know what she's doing. But I have had... My podcast has revolutionised my own personal relationship to myself as a sexual being. And the women that come on, every single one of them, teaches me something that opens my heart, my mind, my vagina and my vulva a little bit more so that I'm growing. And that's the thing that I get fed back mostly about my podcast from people, and just DMs or just messages or however they want to get in touch with us, just saying that the education is not experts. The education is from hearing women talk about it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, well, like the blended orgasm, was it? Is that when you like the toothbrush, but you're getting it like a Magimix? Obviously, you've got to make sure you don't have the blade on. Do not remove the blade.
No.
Keep the blade for soup, but you will get a very... Is that what's the blended orgasm for the listener?
That's an innie and an outie, isn't it, a blended orgasm?
It is. So one of the questions at the beginning of the quiz is clitoral or G-spot. And June and Natalie Campbell, Badass Women's Hour host, were like, both. And I was like, yeah, okay, but if you had to choose desert island, only one or the other, and they were like, no, both at the same time, a blended orgasm. So you stimulate your G-spot and your clitoris at the same time, and if you're stimulating both and have an orgasm, it is literally one of the most insane.
Oh, it blows
sensation.
Your fucking head off. It's
yeah,
fucking lovely. It's absolutely
Ellie,
excellent.
Have you had a blended orgasm?
I have. Okay. Thank you, Mika. Yes. Now my voice is going all high.
So, and I
didn't know it was called that though. I'll admit, I just thought it's a little bit of extra fun, isn't it?
Well, I think the thing for me with penetrative sex throughout my sexual career is that I think I've come quite close to having that, because often, so I think most women need clitoral stimulation in order to try to achieve orgasm, right? That's pretty textbook. More women find it easier to reach climax that way than they do through penetration. But I've plenty of times I'd had penetrative sex and experienced something similar to a blended orgasm, but once it was focused in my mind to actually look out for it, that was a different ball game. And then, of course, over the last 5 years, research has come out to explicitly affirm that actually the G-spot is at just the back of the clitoris. So it's the complex, the clitoral urethral complex, and the nerves that are behind the clitoris come back through your vaginal wall and create a soft patch, or a patch that can be stimulated, and it is literally just the nerves of that complex. So it shouldn't even be called a blended orgasm, because really you're stimulating the same
thing.
Exactly.
It's just like,
yeah,
it's a little trapdoor.
Yeah.
Little, you know.
And the only reason that some people don't have a G-spot, so this whole like ongoing, slightly gaggy thing of does the G-spot exist, is just needs to be shut down, that conversation, because of course, because our anatomy is so different. If you have a very thick vaginal wall and short nerves of the clitoris, you may not get that sensation on the back wall. So you may not have that spot that can be stimulated, or it might change, because actually the walls get thinner as you get older. So that's partly why women have more intense pleasure. So it can be harder to orgasm as you get older, but also when you do, you may find other ways to have pleasure as you get older, because the body shape's changing.
And also, I read your book, your clitoris grows as you get older.
Your what grows?
Your clitoris. clitoris, your lady button, your love nubbin, that grows as well, like your ears.
The little man in the pink canoe.
Yeah.
And your nose. And the only
your nose, your ears and your clit all grow.
Every time I come on a podcast, which is not a huge amount, but I'm absolutely honoured to be here. Thank you for having me. Before I go
good backtrack, good backtrack.
No, I Ellie really
did a lovely light lunch as well.
I really
she did
mean
a lovely,
it. Yeah, we, had, we never lunch, yeah, there was no sex. But I, every time I do say no quite a lot. Anyway, whatever. The point is that I always think don't talk too much about sex and don't talk too much about your own personal experience of sex because it's going to be out there and I can't out myself.
No, that's fair enough.
I can't out myself.
And I know some people complain about it, don't they? And so this, we're all going bang on about it too much. But I think,
who?
Like you say, well,
send them
know.
To me.
Yeah.
I'll have them.
Yeah. But go. I think it's because, especially for people who haven't been grown up talking about it or grew up of a generation where it wasn't acceptable to talk about it in public, it's almost like it's a release, isn't it? It's a freedom. It's
being and it feels like a bit of a rebalance because it, and especially it's not like it's a religion, but you sort of feel like you are excited about it because it was locked away for so long.
Well, and it's interesting that you mention religion because, you know, coming back to some of our earlier conversations about why this change is so important is that religion has had a profoundly detrimental impact
and still is having a detrimental impact on those
for both men and women. Actually, it's not really gender specific, but I just think that we carry such a deep amount of shame around it, and the teasing and the judging that I mentioned when I was at school, that but I think that is a lot of people's experience, and I just think the more we can talk about it and normalize it and chat about it, like, you know, do you want a cup of tea, the better for our mental health, for our physical health, for how we treat each other as human beings, you know?
Speak for yourself. I think the whole thing's disgusting. Disgusting. Women fiddling with themselves, watching Bridgerton and having a little strum. It's an absolute disgrace. You should be ashamed of yourselves. Me and Pete, we cut a hole in a sheet twice a year. Once Christmas, once for his birthday. Job fucking done.
How is erotic twitch, Ellie?
Erotic twitch? Yes, we haven't talked about that.
Oh, that's right.
So, regular listeners may know I do twitch, which is like playing video games live on the internet while people talk to you and sometimes give you money.
Yes.
It's basically like exotic dancing, but I keep my clothes on.
Have you ever done that erotic dancing?
I like where you're going with this.
Is that an invitation?
Do you know what happens though? When she gets drunk, she does a form of eroticism in the form of an Irish dance.
I do river dance, yeah. I do river dance.
Naked?
River dance, I
naked.
Call it.
No.
But it's very arousing, I'm
it
told.
It is. Is it the foot movement?
Oh, yeah. I think it's her bouncing bosoms, to be honest. She doesn't move her arms.
No.
No, yeah.
It's not that right.
Who do you think I am? I know that we're new friends, but it feels like you've got absolutely zero measure of me. I love it. I really like it. But Ellie, do you know what? When Ellie was growing up, she tells this great story about her parents. I love her parents, but they were quite out there, and they take her to, you know, holidays in Marrakesh and Ibiza. And then she said there would be times where her parents would take her to nudist beach and she would be fully clothed reading her book.
Me too.
I didn't like it. I'll keep my swimming costume on, thanks. This is weird. And they'd be like, what are you talking about, darling? Just be free. It's the 80s. Let's just live. And then,
so you had the same experience.
Yeah. We used to go to nature's camps too, but I just used to find the men running and the women running too much.
Do you know what got to me always? It was the table tennis. I couldn't cope with the table tennis.
Oh, God.
Things flapping about.
I mean, listen, Ellie, I feel that your statement that I don't have the measure of you is very accurate because you did come on my podcast and admit that you're not scummy at all. So it's really fucking confusing. Over the last 5 years since we've met, I've believed you're online. I've believed both of you are online. You were married.
Yes, I was.
And you were both mums. And now I don't even know if you've got children. They're not here.
I don't even know if you've got a vagina. Happy or not. No, I'm blended scummy. So I definitely have. If you sit in my lounge, you can see all the fucking Star Wars Lego and bullshit. If you open this cupboard, just literally a ton of shit will fall out.
It's colour coordinated. You know,
I like it. I like a matching cushion.
Yeah.
It's about balance.
I think you should just start calling yourself scummy, though. I really think you need to remove the mummies. I think it's elitist.
The scummy.
I think it's elitist. Okay. I think it's uninviting to those of us that are child free.
Well, that's a fair point.
And I think that.
Can we just call it the Helen and Ellie show?
Yes!
and just
Helen,
be done
Helen
with
and
it.
Mika.
Yes.
Helen and Ellie and Mika's joke. Every week Mika just tells her one numerical joke. And then
it could be an ongoing gag.
You know the one about why is six crying? Because 7, 8, 9.
Oh yes.
Yeah. I think that's a fair. In all seriousness, it's a fair and interesting point. Because when we started Scummy Mummies, our jokes, we bonded over the fact that we weren't relatively new mums, and that was, and our humour was about that. Yeah. It was about childbirth and breastfeeding and nursery and all that shit. And as we've got older, it has expanded into sex and dating and relationships.
But also talking about our parents and ageing
and death and all of that stuff,
and also money and politics. We don't shy away from.
Yeah, and we never did want it to be an exclusive club, and we never did want people who were child-free to feel excluded.
But I
thank you, Mika. We will rebrand as the
just
scummy old slags.
Yeah. Just angling for a role.
The scummy wankers. There you go.
I'm in.
But no, I'm interested. It's an interesting thought, isn't it? If you're listening and you think we should change our hugely successful brand at this point in our career, do write in. Let's
maybe after 10 years we can start the new decade of being just slags. Just slags. That's nice.
Yeah.
Speak for yourself.
One of us is a slag.
Oh, I'm having a lovely time. But I do regularly test for STIs. That's very nice.
Do you know what the etymology is of the word slag? By any chance. Does anyone? Do you know, Ellie? I don't
know.
I mean, it has to be from slag heap, right? Something to do with...
I was just thinking, is it a mining...
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it'd be interesting to know.
I like you. You talked about pussy in your... I mean, you talk about pussy. You don't stop talking about pussy.
Talk about pussy.
In your book, where does pussy come from?
Pusillanimous. Oh, I love this. So throughout the book for The Happy Vagina, which is, as discussed, Helen, a loud and... It's not superficial in a negative way, but it's a light read full of really loud... Ellie's actually yawning.
I read her book. I keep saying that. When I
did
read
you read all of it?
I'm going to leave you traumatised.
I flicked every page.
She skim reads all the books, then she tells the guests.
I read the book. I love the book, and I read a lot of it, and I had it's very good.
So, I do apologise, I've been up since 5:30. Carry on.
She's at her best when she's cross and tired.
I basically have put together a collection of, they're not found out just by me, it's a collection of really loud, obnoxious, and interesting facts about everything to do with women's gynae sexual kind of area, and then some self-esteem stuff too. And throughout it, there is littered these kind of like myths or truths about where things came from. And one of my favourites, actually my favourite fact in the whole book and ever from the history of time, is the reclaiming of the idea that sperm... I know this is going to feel like a tangent, but I am going to come back to pussy. But
here we go. Don't take a mouthful of coffee, everybody.
That's what I like my dates to say. I'll come back to the pussy. Yeah. Yes, please. Yeah.
So, leave that egg white omelette for now.
Yeah.
So I don't know about you, but when I was at school, the images, textbook images of how an egg is fertilised by the sperm always presented this idea that the sperm were like this army, right?
Like in the movie as well.
Yeah.
Fighting the movie, their way through, and then one of the sperm wins the egg and percolates it, or whatever
this is the millions, and then one lucky
sperm.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, so the truth is that the now this is tricky, and I wasn't allowed to put this in an interview that I did for the book.
Is it libelous? Because don't say it on our podcast.
No, it's to do with what's going on with abortion internationally.
Right.
So I'm going to use the word consciousness, but I do not believe that a cell, it has the kind of consciousness that means we shouldn't be allowed to have abortion up to a healthy date, just to caveat that.
Yep.
However, the egg chooses the sperm. So essentially, when the thousands of sperm come up the vaginal canal and through the fallopian tube trying to get to the egg, an egg has a consciousness and it chooses, in the same way that we bump around in life trying to find a partner that feels
right.
Yeah,
but we have brains. The egg's not sentient. It doesn't have
it has a feeling, but we have feelings for them.
It has a feeling?
Not feelings as in energy.
Ah.
Energy. You know, that we do, it literally, you can't, now this is really interesting that you would believe that a sperm would have enough energy to be the army that would go through and choose, but you don't believe the opposite, that an opening can happen. Because essentially that an energy that like forces is the same as an energy that opens. That's the same thing.
So your theory is that
when... It's not a theory, it's proven.
But I don't think the sperm are choosing whether or not to like run down the tunnel. I think in the same way as when you put a tap on, the water just comes out of the tap. It's not choosing to come out of the tap.
But women aren't lying upside down when they're getting pregnant.
What do you mean?
With the sperm falling down? What do you think drives the sperm up?
The magic glue.
Energy. Energy.
Well, when you've seen a spunk, it goes.
But it's
like a fire hydrant.
Well, I agree with, but then it has to get through and get to the egg and get into the
egg. Where's it got this energy from? Has it had a fucking Snickers bar?
How do you think you come into the world if you don't have energy?
In the love one.
I don't think having energy and consciousness is the same thing.
But maybe consciousness is not the right word. But what I can tell you is that there is a conversation that goes on. And I'm not getting hocus pocus about it. I'm not saying you choose your parents. It's not that.
Mm.
It's there is already... Of course our bodies have a consciousness and an energy in them.
Mm.
It's not an energy like a thinking energy, but even the fact that we have a period once a month, like the body is really intelligent.
Right.
So the egg essentially decides which sperm is the one that gets to come in.
Based on what criteria? Is it on, like, are there Tinder profiles?
I go to real estate agents.
Check out my hat. No. I'm very tall.
Nobody in a high-vis vest.
It's actually, I think it's feeling. It's like it is in the same way. So I don't know if you know this about your hormones. So I just need to caveat the fact that I have actually trained in one of my other lives after Mum died in terms of my healing process as a cranial osteopath. And a lot of the stuff that I'm talking about has been proven scientifically.
Okay.
But is also from that work that I've done, which is about the extraordinary energetics that we have in our body that can do things without us thinking. That's kind of where I started to explore this and understand that actually the egg has more of a say. It's not like there's like a kind of like queen egg that's like lying back looching it.
Not you, you're not the
picture you're painting. I'm imagining it's like The Apprentice. She's just behind a big desk. All these pricks rock up and she's
like that.
There's a reclamation of the fact that it is not just an army of sperm with one of them fighting its way through. And if anything, I would say that whole kind of dialogue or, you know, belief or understanding is very, very detrimental to women, but to men and women together. This idea that the woman has to be, you know, I'm going to like, you know, force her into a relationship with me stems from this teaching, and it just doesn't happen that way.
Oh, so we're not just receivers, we're active in that. Can we get back to
pussy?
I can believe as well that not, you know, the fighty sperm aren't necessarily the ones who win, because I've got two sons and one of them's incredibly laid back. The idea of him, you know, fighting out of a paper bag.
He was born from egg.
It's hilarious. He'd really much rather just have a sit down.
Strongest soldier.
Pussies?
Yes, we must talk about pussy.
Pussy, when you're using it in a derogatory way, so if I call you a pussy because I consider you to be weak, particularly between men and men, which women have always felt is a really derogatory term, insulting, misogynistic, it's actually from pusillanimous, which does mean weak. Etymology, it actually means a weakness or a patheticness, pusillanimous.
Yeah.
And I'd like to think that our nickname for vulva vaginas, pussy, has got nothing to do with pusillanimous, and that it only came from the more sexual connotation.
Of stroking a cat.
Yeah.
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 Well, we could talk about your vagina all day, but sadly, we're running out of time, mainly because, you know, I'm tired, I've started yawning. I think...
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
It's time for the Scummy Mummy Confessions.
Should we do a blended confession, Ellie?
Let's do a blended confession. Let's talk about the other week. Mm. So we had a little birthday lunch up London, and then we had a few birthday drinks. Mm. Let's be honest, maybe too many birthday drinks. I know you don't drink, Mika, so no. You just get to sit there and feel incredibly smug about this.
I have drunk a lot, so I get
historically,
it.
Historically, yeah.
I'm in.
You can empathise. And then it got to like the evening time. By this point, the lunch had been going on for, I think, 9 or 10 hours.
Yes. It was quite significant.
And I said, I think it's time. Yeah. I think it's time to go
home. We're all swaying a bit.
I'll call us a cab. And then our friend who was with us,
unwisely,
he said, I'll get the bill and I'll have a whiskey sour. And I was like, okay, I'll just pay the bill. And you said, whiskey sour.
That sounds delicious.
I have no memory of this.
I quite often, if I'm honest, have to walk the line between, I feel very protective and loving towards Helen, but also she's a great woman. Heron. That's her other
Herod.
Friend.
Yeah.
Heron Thron. It's a dragon. So I have to walk the line of like, I want to sort of look after and protect her, but I'm not her mum and I don't want to patronise her. So it's that thing of, and I don't always tread that. It's a difficult line to walk.
Oh, that's like with any friendships. Sometimes you have to go, no.
Yeah. So I tried to sort of gently suggest that a whiskey sour, having had about 40 other drinks, and I've never seen, the other thing, Mika, I've never seen the bitch drink a whiskey sour. I was like, why? Since when have we been into whiskey sours? I've never seen you order a whiskey, let alone something sour.
I'm a fizzy wine gin. Tea. I'm a simple girl. I'm a simple lady.
But she was like, whiskey sour, please. I was like, all right.
All drunk,
right,
Helen's fine, talking now.
Fine. Yeah. So she had the whiskey sour and we paid the bill and we left and we got in and we were up London and we had to get all the way back to South London and we got about halfway home and then you passed out. You got in the cab and passed out.
Oh, see, that's better. It's better if I sleep. It's just better if she goes to sleep.
So it's fine. And I put my noise-cancelling headphones on, listen to a podcast about video games or the news or something.
The Happy Vagina?
That's right. Yes, I listen to The Happy Vagina. It's my favourite episode. It's with Gwyneth Paltrow. And listen to that. And my headphones are noise-cancelling, right? So it took me a little while to cut. I was quite dry. I wasn't really paying attention. And suddenly I looked over and you'd like sat almost bolt upright, like as if from a dream. And I was like, oh, you're right, mate. And you didn't answer. And then you look, your sort of head lolled towards the window. And I went, oh, no, oh, no, oh, no. And then you pressed the window button and it got like halfway down. And I said to the lovely man,
Just stop, please pull over.
And you then proceeded to like vomit sort of at the window. So like half of it. It was like a horse in the Grand National that was going to have to be shot. It sort of half got over the window and then half just dripped all the way inside and like into the handwell and the footwell.
I'm not proud. Very embarrassed.
And the poor man. And then we pulled over and I sort of pulled the door open and then I had like some tissues in my pocket, so I was cleaning up the seat, just trying to wipe it.
Dearie me.
And the man went round and you were just vomiting. And then it went on my shoes and I was like, happy birthday to me.
And the man, and I was at this point, I was like, this man's going to throw us out of the cab, and I don't know what I'm going to do because I don't know how I'm going to get home. I don't even know where we are. But he opened up his boot, and like Batman, he had a fucking whole kit, a whole sick kit. He had wipes, he had spray, he had carrier bags, he had rubber gloves, he had the full banana, and I was standing there with my three.
It's a credit to Uber.
Absolute credit to the airline.
But he doesn't claim to be a scummy mummy.
No. And I said what at the time seemed witty because I was drunk. This isn't your first rodeo. And he was just like, no, it isn't. And it wasn't even the first time he'd heard someone say that.
Probably the second time that night.
So he handed me the kit and I cleaned up the thing and it was fine. And he very kindly then still continued the journey and took us home. And he was like, it's fine. And then I got out of the cab and I tipped him what the cab fare cost again. So to say sorry, thank you.
It was his birthday as well.
It was his birthday. I'm a good person. If HMRC are listening, it was a business meeting. That's why we paid for the cab on the joint account.
And for my birthday, Ellie is kindly cooking me a roast.
In my house. So that I don't have to get you home.
I will walk home with my children.
She was like, let's go out for lunch. I was like, I don't mind cooking you something at mine.
I said, I'll bring the wine. So then, and then we're all good. That'd be lovely. I'm looking forward to it.
I'll get the whiskey and the sour in.
And the bags. Oh. And the wet wipes. So, yes, that's the birthday scum. You don't have to do a confession after that. It was quite an elaborate story.
I mean, it's like, that's just an extraordinary... And what mostly I've been thinking is, I don't have those anymore since I stopped drinking. I've got hundreds of them from years ago.
Must be nice.
But now I don't drink anymore. Things don't really go wrong in quite the same...
I am genuinely envious of that.
Quite the same level.
No, there is... Ellie and I have had periods of where we haven't drunk for various reasons.
Yeah.
And we always say, it's annoying how good you feel in the morning every day.
Well, I was with someone recently and they've stopped drinking too. And they said, what I worked out is that whenever I've got problems or things go wrong, if I actually did a map, it all leads back to alcohol. Mm. Whether it be being late for something or... And I thought that was really interesting. I thought, I don't have any funny stories anymore about getting drunk.
Do you have any funny or embarrassing stories about...
I mean, literally, I don't know why I'm having such a blank, because I do things all the time that I have to ring mates up and go, I can't believe I've just done this. Like, literally, but I cannot think of any right
now. Don't worry.
That's all right.
Listen, Mika, you're a multimedia node. Where do we start with all the things? All the places people can follow you. Lady Garden.
At Lady Garden Foundation on Instagram is a really good place to start, and also the website. At the moment, we've got the Vagina Dialogues, which is education around the gynae cancers. We've got a little pamphlet that you can order and get sent to your house. The Happy Vagina podcast is at The Happy Vagina. And
feet to Gwyneth Paltrow, famously.
Yeah.
And Scummy Mummies. And Amanda Abington.
Yeah, such a great episode with you women.
Oh,
and also Kate Walsh's episode and Katerina Scorsone from Grey's Anatomy this season has been really, really quite life-changing in terms of thoughts around women, babies. Katerina's got a Down syndrome daughter. Kate Walsh is child-free. So that. And then I've got a film coming out later this year with Joanna Lumley in it. So... My Route with Maisie. I just thought I'd throw that in.
Oh, yeah, we haven't done that. Your amazing film. You're award-winning.
I have to come on when it
comes
out.
Come back on and talk about it. Yeah. Bring Lumley.
I love Lumley. Love a bit of Lumley.
Yeah.
No, that's excellent. Well, thank you, Mika. And, I mean, thank you for being here, but thank you for all what you do.
Thank you for asking me to share my story with you. It's been really amazing.
It has.
Oh, it's been lovely to have you. Thank you. Tickets for our live show are now on sale.
they're doing our big greatest hit show, which will be an extravaganza. If you've been to a Scummy Mummy show before and you've loved it, come along, because there'll be elements of that, but there'll be a whole lot of new stuff, new costumes, a couple of new jokes. You'll love it. And we're touring up and down the country. Just get tickets from scummymummies.com.
Yes. Thank you, Mika. Lovely to chat to you.
Thank you so much.
Very interesting, also moving. And you did try a joke, so well done.
I've got another one. Man wakes up at the crack of dawn. And he says, Dawn, get the fuck out of my face.
Yay! Yes! Fucking knocks it out of the park.
Oh, you like that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, you should have opened with that, to be honest. Never mind.
No, hold it back. Hold it back. Hold it back.
Oh, thank you very much for listening. Until next time.
Goodbye.
Bye.
I've got Safe Search on, unfortunately, so you can't see it, but basically that's
It's a three-way between men. Wow.
Very anyway,
That's a lot going on.
They're enjoying themselves.
And they're having a lovely time, enjoying themselves.
Clean.
And then I don't know why it's called a lemon tea party.
It became such a big thing that now, like, people make lemon party pornography about the lemon party.
Oh, I see.
I just saw a nice picture for you. Can't find it now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.